lot of those things on the table here as we welcome you to Missoula, Montana. I'm Tom Schultz. Yes, Voices of Montana. We're live here, getting up, doing some 406, but this agenda is huge. When we look at Electrify the Big Sky, put on by the Montana Electric Cooperatives Association, they have a list of breakout sessions and speakers here and agenda items that have actually drawn a lot of attention because this is a sold-out crowd. We're at the UC Center, third floor in the ballroom, and we've got a sold-out crowd here for this. It tells you an awful lot about how important energy is to everybody. Let me tell you who's going to be on a bit later on. A gentleman named Vern Dosh, just heard him speak, 45 years in the industry, but he's retired, so he just went off. He had no filter, he said, though. Actually, a really good discussion there. We'll also talk with Keith Dennis, who's president of Beneficial Electrification League. We'll talk about what beneficial electrification means. Also, Joel Cook is going to be with us, BPA, it's the Bonneville Power Administration, BPA. He's the chief operating officer there. We'll talk an awful lot about the hydro system that they have. They also have a nuclear plant. One thing in the notes here, discipline, cost containment, and modernizing assets and system operations. Our first guest, pleasure to welcome Mark Hayden, GM of Missoula Electric Co-op. Mark, what's going on?
Tom, good morning. Thanks for having me, and thanks for coming to Missoula to cover our Electrify the Big Sky conference.
This is a huge thing, and getting a sold-out audience here as well. What does that tell you?
You know, it tells me that people are interested in their energy future. It tells me that it's difficult for Montanans especially to travel to their local dealership and kick the tires on an electric vehicle, and all that's available today to try and answer questions about our energy future and to actually see some of the equipment and vehicles that people can buy.
We should talk about that as well. There's a trade show going on here. We chatted with Chad Bauer earlier from Republic Services. He's got this huge electric garbage truck out there. He was talking about how efficient it is, and actually there's some power in that as well.
There is. You know, it. We've got some great sponsors here. As you mentioned, we have a trade show downstairs, and you know, Lithia Ford from Missoula has brought their Ford Lightning. Those are tough to find yet. And so an F-150 it might be a game changer for rural Montana. As you mentioned, Republic Services brought a garbage truck, and hats off to them. They had to transport that all the way from Boise because they don't have one here yet. But also Mountain Lion has one of their new buses downstairs. We have our Chevy Bolt that the co-op recently purchased. So a chance for people to check it out. And also Flanagan Motors has a variety of used ones that people can actually jump behind the wheel and take it for a drive today.
That's one of the interesting aspects here when you talk about energy nowadays. I mean, it maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, the energy discussion was transitioning, was changing a little bit, but it was mostly about, again, the reliability, the affordability, and the safety aspect of it. But now we have this transformation that I don't know if it's clearing the waters or muddying the waters. It's certainly an important process that we're going through, but has our energy world just got more complex because of this?
I think it has, but a couple things remain true. We need to, and you mentioned it in your opening, affordability and reliability are the key. They've always been the key for electric co-ops in Montana, and they will be in the future. So we need to figure out how we're going to make this transition, keep the lights on, keep rates affordable, and electrify all of the vehicles, equipment, new devices in the home that are coming our way. Because as we all know, policymakers have spoken in many ways and said, this transition is likely or going to occur.
Well, and it's complicated, too, because portions of it, a lot of it, as a matter of fact, is mandated. And as I said, I don't mind the kick in the rear at times to get some things done. But I'm not sure. We've talked about it frequently. The math is complete on it. There, and some of your speakers are speaking to that issue as well.
You bet. We're going to have folks talking about electric vehicles, of course. I mean, that's a big part of this transition, but it's more than that. It's how do we transition from where we are today to where we need to be in the future from a grid standpoint?
Without breaking the bank
and keeping the lights on. That's correct. I think it can happen. but we need to do it strategically, and that's the key. And so we have folks from the power supply side. We have folks from the electric vehicle side. We're talking about home renovations and new construction. And what does the, what is the implication on rates? At 10:15, I'm going to be...
got a panel. Yeah, go ahead.
Sharing a panel on rates.
Get into that.
So, yeah, rates, you know, at home is one thing. What about when you're driving up and down the road? How are rates going to be established that are reasonable and fair and equitable to both the consumer and the utility who's providing that power? I think that's going to be a great discussion today.
I do, too. And there's a lot to discuss, and there's a lot that needs to be discussed. But I think we're, well, I've always said it's a, maybe somewhat of an irrational rush to renewables. And these aspects need to be in this discussion. I'm not sure they are.
They are, and I know some of these panels will go into that transformation to renewables, to solar, to wind. How do we get from where we are? What are the those transitional type fuels to get us? Because because as you know, we're closing down baseload resources across the nation. We can't continue to do that and, you know, make keep our energy supply reliable. And, and that's, as utilities, we're concerned about that. We're the purpose of today, and I hope what attendees today walk away with, is a better understanding of the utility perspective, of course the consumer's perspective, but how we transition from where we are to where we want to be.
Yeah, and give us some more of that perspective then. As general manager of Missoula Electric Co-op, again, you're going to be hosting a panel or moderating a panel on the impact on rates. Very, very important. What is that utility perspective in this transition?
Well, first and foremost, we want our rates to be equitable. We don't want, let me give you an example. If we have someone who decides that investing in rooftop solar is the right answer for them, we need to ensure that those that do not participate aren't in some way subsidizing that. That's really important to us. We installed the first charging station, the DC fast charger, cooperatively owned in Sealy Lake recently.
I was going to ask you about that. Yes. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And so one of the purposes of installing that is to understand the impact on our utility of DC fast charging stations, which are going to be widely deployed someday, and that's going to take time. But it offers us an opportunity to understand better the impact to the utility, how to price that product accordingly, and make sure that it's fair to those members who have invested through their co-op in a charging station, and the consumer driving up and down the road.
Yeah. And when you look around, Missoula Electric Co-op, how many members?
We have 13,000, roughly.
13,000 members. And they're relatively in a manageable geographic area, would you say?
Yeah, very, very manageable, but very dispersed, right?
Yeah.
We serve five valleys, and there are it's not a nice, compact system.
Good.
It's very, very widely dispersed from Powell, Idaho, to north of Condon near Swan Lake, Lincoln to Superior, Avon, you know, is a widely dispersed territory.
Well, that's good for this question. What do you take then as a utility, as you just described, from what's going on in the world? Because as we talk about this transition, we can already see examples of how it's not been done right or how it has been done right. What has been done right that piques your interest as GM of Missoula Electric Co-op?
Well, in terms of EV deployment, right? I think products are getting out there where people can actually see them and kick the tires.
Yeah.
Until an EV charging network gets widely deployed in a place like Montana, it's not the same as Phoenix or San Francisco, where you can drive up and down the road and see a Tesla every block. We need to get infrastructure built out, and we need to take time and do that right. From a renewable standpoint, I think battery storage, a way to maximize the capacity of that, is going to be critical. We need transitional resources, and we need to protect that base load. For us, it's hydropower, and I know Joel Cook's going to be talking to you shortly. We need to protect that base load carbon-free resource that we rely upon each and every day. And we need to be strategic about how we move forward in this transition.
We do. And I'm not, I guess from my perspective, I'm not sure we're very strategic about it. I think not everybody is on the same page when it comes to what I think we are, what the end goals is, but how to get there.
Yeah. That's right. And it's not clear. I don't think it's clear. And depending upon who you talk to, I think the answer will vary.
And that's
honestly
why it's so important to have conferences like this, right?
Absolutely. And that's why we're hosting it, is to inform our members, inform our cooperative colleagues, and we've brought experts from across the nation to have those conversations.
Well, as you mentioned, Joel Cook is going to join us in just a bit. He's Chief Operating Officer of the BPA, and I'm looking forward to that discussion as well. I imagine you would be too if you were. You can hang around if you want.
You know, you mentioned our 13,000 members, and they are beneficiaries of what I consider to be the greatest collection of generating resources on the planet, and marketed to us through Bonneville, and we are so fortunate to have that and so fortunate to have Joel as part of that organization.
It's been a steady source. It's been, we talk about reliability, but that's a federal agency. And sometimes you look at reliability and agencies and you go, I'm not sure that always works, but I think BPA has been one of those.
Absolutely.
That's coming up, but what's going on now at Missoula Electric Co-op? I know you're still into wildfire mitigation efforts, and you've had a breakout. We've all had a breakout here in the past 2 or 3 weeks.
In fact, we have. You know, we had a pretty good summer going in terms of smoke, and that's changed, but our work to prevent and mitigate the risk of power line spark wildfires continues, and we've really ramped that up this year. As you know, or as we've talked about in the past, we put a wildfire mitigation plan in place at the end of 2020. We're working the plan. We've got lots of work to do, but it's an ongoing, never-ending process, right? And we're trying to harden our system. We're trying to remove and cut vegetation wherever we can. But, knock on wood, we've had a good 2022. We need to ensure that continues and our work continues in that regard.
I better take a break. Joel's standing by. We'll pick up this discussion because this wildfire mitigation thing, when it comes to what the electric co-ops and Missoula Electric Co-op in particular, very, very important. And we see, I think, examples out there of it being done wrong and causing great damage. So, yes. And I'm glad you're leading on that. And thank you for hosting this. Appreciate it. Thanks for being on too, Mark.
Thank you, Tom. Rewards Plus program and never pay full price for fuel again.
Save 5 cents on every gallon every day at any town pump across Montana.
Plus, earn and redeem points on your favorite in-store items to get free stuff with our clubs.
Stop in and pick up a rewards card. Download the Pump It Up Rewards Plus app today.
Or visit townpump.com/rewards to register and start saving.
Right down the road. Pump it up. Oh,
yeah. 406 and again for Voices of Montana. We're live from Electrify the Big Sky. That's going on in Missoula. We're at the UC Center, third floor here. Great place for this. And as I mentioned, Tom Schultz alongside. Thanks again for being here. A lot of good discussions going on about this. Well, a lot of us, just this electric transformation, and Caitlin Murray, as a matter of Murphy, just a little while ago talked about where do we go from here. That's a huge question. EVs in Montana, there's breakout sessions going on. Is there enough power to electrify homes in the future? A lot of these questions are part of this discussion of transition. Now joined by Joel Cook, the BPA, and that's the Bonneville Power Administration. He's the Chief Operating Officer since 2021, but Senior Vice President of Power Service in 2017. Joel, thanks for being here. I appreciate that. You got some Montana roots, I guess. Born and bred here.
Yep. Thank you, Tom. I'm a Montana native, as well as my wife, and happy to be back in Montana for this conference.
Yeah. Well, of course. You know, it's once you're raised here, it stays with you, doesn't it?
Yep. Yeah, it sure does.
BPA, you and I were just chatting. I know an awful lot about BPA because I've been following this issue. And I just was speaking with Mark, maybe you didn't hear. I've always thought that the BPA had a number of challenges, But I think as far as a, you know, an administration, it's been a real steady, I think, and purposeful agency. What's the BPA?
Yeah, most people don't accuse us of moving too fast. but BPA is a nonprofit, self-funded Federal Power Marketing Administration that sells power at wholesale at cost-based rates. So our customers are people like Missoula Electric Co-op. So they are what we refer to as preference customers. By statute from Congress, rural electric public power entities have preference for the electricity that is generated from all the 31 different dams that the federal family owns. The Corps and the Bureau own and operate. We market all that power. And the only nuclear power plant, Columbia Generating Station in Washington in the Northwest. So we take all that power and then we transmit it over BPA-owned power transmission system to our customers. And we have probably the largest transmission footprint in the Northwest, yeah. Over 15,000 circuit miles, hundreds of substations. So we touch a lot of people, not only in public power, but all the investor-owned utilities that serve the more populous parts of the states.
What challenges now are you guys facing?
tremendous challenge. I mean, there's a lot of demand for power, a lot of electrification that we're talking about
here. It's just going to keep growing, too.
Yep.
So
yeah, big server farms are locating in our area, big consumers of energy, but also just load growth from, you know, day-to-day activities. So to serve that, we've got lots of new requests coming onto the grid, mainly driven by state mandates like Washington State, who has a carbon initiative to reduce carbon emissions. But it's created this boom of renewable requests to come connect to our grid, so much that we're having trouble even, you know, processing those requests. Many of those, most of them, don't get built once they see what the cost is to upgrade the transmission system. They fall out of what we call the queue or fall out of line and not want to move forward, but some do. And those are the serious ones we want to help connect to the grid.
Is it important for people to understand the complexity of our power grid, or is it more important for them to maybe just take an ABC kind of look at it? As we're talking about this discussion, and everybody needs to be involved about this, hopefully it's a rational transition to renewables, what do we need to know?
Yeah, it'd be great if people, you know, it is a complex topic,
yeah. But
it would be great if people better understood the limitations and the complexity to the system. You know, to better appreciate, you know, we have a very reliable system, but the system can't do everything. And we have to have resources that are flexible and can change based on consumers' demand. So when somebody switches on their light, they need to understand that there's a generator of some sort responding to that request for electricity. And that's where it gets complex. But, you know, there's a big push for renewable energy right now. We, in the Bonneville Power, we consider all of our resources carbon-free, and our hydro renewable. It's water-generated electricity. But the industry doesn't consider it renewable.
Oh.
So so we are carbon free. At times, if we have low water years, we have to purchase from the market like most people. And at times, we're surplus, so we sell to other folks. So, but we have one of the most flexible portfolios in the country. Our hydro resources can respond to very quick peaks or seasonal peaks. Up and down all the time, and they respond quite well, more so than any other source of generation.
Joel Cook is with us, Bonneville Power Administration Chief Operating Officer. I have talked about this, I've railed about it, because it doesn't make sense to me, the push out there by, in my opinion, I think are extreme environmental organizations that have lost their true agenda through this, to remove some of those Columbia River dams. And I just don't know in any, it doesn't even make sense for the fish, to tell you the truth. How do you, as the BPA, how do you feel about that then? And, but how do you interject your values or your mission into that discussion?
Yeah, it's sometimes hard to understand. It's a sensitive topic. Lots of different viewpoints on that. But, you know, the dams that we're talking about in the Lower Snake Dams, they all have fish passage. We're having great returns this year. There is impacts to the environment from the dams, and we have one of the largest fish wildlife programs in the country to mitigate those impacts that the dams cause. So we are doing everything we're asked to, well, not asked to, but everything we're responsible for to mitigate those dams.
Well, everything that is not involved politics.
Yes. Lots of politics.
There's a lot of politics in this, and that's unfortunate. In fact, there's probably way too much politics, and I'm hearing speakers address that. I've called it an irrational rush to renewables, and I don't want to get away from what BPA does either. So I'm gonna bring that back, because we have other guests to talk about that transition and how to do it, I think, more rationally. But I wanted to talk about a couple of things here. The BPA, one of the things that was noted in this program here is that part of your responsibility is discipline, cost, containment. Yeah. I like how that is put together. How do you accomplish discipline, cost, containment?
Yeah, when I came to Bonneville, prior to coming to Bonneville, we had a steady increase in our costs. And the mandate from our customers was, hey, you need to get your cost under control, or we're going to look for alternative sources. And it wasn't just a lame threat. Customers were actually seeing prices from the market that were cheaper than Bonneville. So we put a strategy together to get our costs under control. And it is very important. The dams and the nuclear plant, the nuclear plant's more expensive, but the dams are very low-cost generators. But when you add the Fish and Wildlife Program on top of it, we are the largest energy conservation program in the country. We do, up to 50 megawatts a year in energy conservation. It's a very, very successful program. And then our other costs, it adds up. So if you look at the cost per megawatt hour, it's very low, but when you add all the other costs of all the other things we're asked to do, it increases the cost. But we are focused on cost management. In the past 4 years, we flattened our cost.
Mm-hmm. How?
Well, we look at efficiencies across the board. We started asking our employees, what can we stop doing that's really not meeting our mission and our goals?
Good question. Good, simple question,
yep,
right?
They're pretty straightforward. And then we were also blessed with this year, for example, we're having a great water year. It's hard to understand when Southwest has no water and we're having a great water year.
Not everybody's having a great water year.
And
we'll just put it that way.
So our customers are going to see a substantial dividend.
Oh, good.
Just money coming back to them, because the sale of our surplus energy, not the energy they bought at the fixed price, but the surplus that we sell comes back as a credit to all of our customers.
Yeah.
Because they're on the hook. Our customers pay all of our costs. We get no taxpayer funding.
No taxpayer funding.
No taxpayer funding.
And that's
funding.
What I like. We are
rate-based, nonprofit, and so we're having a great year. Our customers are going to see some of that money come back to them.
What another aspect of this is, let me go back to cost containment. when you're seeing what's going on in California, I mean, there's other lots of examples out there that where the grid is not exactly ready for the kind of energy needs that are being utilized through this transition. How do you prepare then, as Chief Operating Officer of BPA, how do you prepare for possible brownouts? How do you prepare for possible blackouts? And what's the likelihood of those things? And then that goes all to the open market, because then if you don't have that energy, you're buying it on the open market, and that just throws rates right out the door.
Yeah, there's really two aspects to it. One is the power production and having an excellent source of power production, but the other is the grid. We have built a very vast but very efficient and reliable and resilient transmission grid.
Good.
And it takes a lot of work every day. We have lots of people in the field every day maintaining that system, addressing issues, outages. Right now, we're in the midst of wildfire season. So we have a program where we try to avoid at all costs shutting off electricity, but under certain conditions, like above 60-mile-an-hour winds, there are certain lines that we know we want to take offline.
I see.
To avoid any kind of issues with wildfires. But we are constantly adapting to the demands of the grid, you know, load requests to add load, generation interconnects to add generation, and that takes investment. And that investment comes through the people that utilize our system, because I said we'd get no taxpayer funding. Even this infrastructure bill from Congress, oh, yeah. Bonneville cannot participate in that because we're a self-funded agency.
Well, that's good. I guess when you talk about sustainability, if you manage that correctly, you're going to be around for a little while.
Right.
Let's get to our next guest here. And a pleasure to welcome Jim Horan. Get that right? Yeah. He's the executive director of the Midwest Electric Consumers Association. And Jim, thanks for being here. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it.
Why are you here? What's your organization? And who is your organization and why are you here?
So my organization represents 310 cooperative municipal utilities spread over 9 states, so Montana to Minnesota down to Colorado. We are a customer group involved with the Western Area Power Administration, so very focused on hydro generation, renewable generation, transmission, market development in the West. And I'm here just because I'm very excited about this transition and what we're doing. And I kind of bring that perspective of the eastern half of Montana clear-eyed on the challenges, but excited about the opportunities that beneficial electrification has for our communities.
What are some of those challenges for your organization?
So, and Vern talked about it a little bit this morning. I'm sure you've heard about it from others as well, but the reliability and resiliency is a challenge across the country. But as we do more electrification, we expect higher levels of reliability. And we need to make sure that we have the transmission there, the system there, the backbone. You mentioned the marvel that is the electric grid. And we need to continue to invest in that. But as we look at beneficial electrification, we're looking at a flexible load, and a more flexible load than we've really ever seen. And so while we have challenges, because we're seeing more and more things being brought onto the grid, we're bringing them on in a way that allows utilities, cooperatives in particular, to manage those loads as they come into the system. And so unlike just adding agricultural load or industrial load, when you add EVs, when you add home heating, when you add all the electrification things we're talking about, you can manage that into the existing system and use that benefit. So on the east side of Montana and in a lot of the areas that I cover, we have incredible wind resources overnight, right? We have negative pricing for wind often overnight.
Oh, yeah.
And so we can charge during those times and benefit from that generation that's already on the system.
I'm curious about the X factor when you're adding these charging stations, or when you're adding up all of the future energy need that may come from electric vehicles, what does the math tell you about how much you need to add? Is it consistent? Do you have a good feel for it?
I think it's consistent. I think we can look to different parts of the country. You know, California is a good example. A lot of Europe, you can see when countries get to 30 or 40% EVs and what that does. You know, the number that kind of gets tossed around is that if we had to build the grid and build, and I'm talking about transmission, distribution, generation, if we had to build that for what we expect electrification to look like in 10 to 20 years, we'd have to quadruple the amount of generation, transmission, distribution that we already have. But again, it's not about necessarily building more of that, but to maximize the value of that. And again, with flexible loads when we bring beneficial electrification on. And that's always a key point when we talk about beneficial electrification, is that it's not always just load growth in the sense that we're adding new things that need to be plugged in. We're adding it in a way that benefits the system, benefits communities, and benefits individuals in those communities. So whether that's heating, whether that's transportation, and that's how we're bringing that in.
The discussion, it's been top down. It's been rather top heavy, I think, in terms of we're trying to accomplish some things through, I think, heavy use of mandates. I don't mind, as I say, the encouragement, the kick in the rear. I don't know that we've done all the math, and maybe, in my opinion, it might be an irrational rush to a renewables. Do we need to slow the grow?
For renewables, no, I don't think we do. I think we need to balance it in a way that we probably haven't had to in the past. You know, 5 or 10 years ago, we were really concerned about reliability and resiliency of the system as we closed down baseload power. I think that is a legitimate concern today, and we've seen that because, unfortunately, we've had a lot of baseloads across the country close at the same time.
Yeah.
So we do need to feather that a little bit, but at the same time, you know, the organizations that I represent, the utilities that I've worked with for my career, that were, you know, very fossil fuel heavy. Every one of them is invested heavily into wind and solar. They see the value of it. They're not going to turn away from that. They're going to continue to invest in that. But you've got to have that balanced approach. You've got to have, you know, fossil fuels, natural gas, coal, storage, particularly storage, matched with wind and solar. And particularly, you know, again, looking at the footprint that in the Great Plains, we have a lot of wind resources. We have probably more wind resources than the rest of the country. So can we do more with that? And the price tags on that are great. The reliability on that is great.
Jim Horan is with us, Executive Director of the Midwest. I should need to look it up again. What is it?
Electric Consumers
Association. Thank you. Yeah, I didn't finish writing it down.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah. Also a past member of the past officer of the NRECA. It's a National Rural Electric Cooperative Association. I want to kind of talk a bit about the grid. We haven't done a ton of that this hour, and people think of the grid, and maybe they just think of sourcing and generation, but transmission is a big part of the challenge into the future. Technology, we hope that technology comes into play and that it's right around the corner, but you can't rely on advances in technology to accomplish goals. I think you have to work with what you got in your toolbox at the time. How is our grid? Where do we need to invest? How do we, if we get to 30-40% EVs in the near future, how is our grid going to be tested?
It's a great question, and I think it depends on where the EV, specific to the EV question, it depends on where they come on, when they come on, how fast they come on. In terms of where we need to invest in the grid, you know, we're looking at, in some cases, 20 to 50-year-old resources that really need to be rebuilt, and the technology has improved consistently across the board. You know, the work the feds are doing with the national labs, DOE, we have a lot more, we can squeeze a lot more out of our transmission system than we could 20 years ago.
We can. Okay, yeah. Good.
And I think, you know, reliability, hardening that system. And we talk about resiliency and reliability. So reliability is how often is it on all the time? Resiliency, we tend to think about, is how quickly does it come back in the event of storms? So in the Dakotas and parts of eastern Montana, huge storm seasons in the last year, polar vortex in 21. How quickly are we able to build that grid back? when those things happen, because they're going to continue to happen. And how do we harden those systems? So that's where I would like to see, and I think a lot of our folks would like to see, the system being built. It's not, you know, there's always going to be a need for new transmission, moving wind particularly to population centers and where it's needed. But we have a great transmission network. We have, you know, we have an east-west interconnect. We have seams. Can we rebuild those existing systems, harden them better to handle storms? Because a lot of the stuff that's been knocked down over the last 10 to 20 years, or last couple of years, is 20 to 30 years old.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point was, we see energy in a sort of or surreal kind of context, but when you're talking about poles and just the deliverability and getting back on, those are areas that I don't know, we don't necessarily comprehend, I think, and it comes in, there's a cost and there's a resource. I mean, do you guys have labor issues like everybody else does?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the labor definitely exists. I think there's always this question, you know, folks will be quick to say, well, just underground things, right? Underground distribution, underground transmission. And some countries have looked at that. Germany's looked at undergrounding or done some undergrounding to transmission. The lifespan of an overhead system is 30 to 50 years. The lifespan of an undergrounded system is 10 to 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And the cost multipliers for underground are huge.
Oh.
And so it's a great point to keep remembering that we're going to have poles and wires in the air, and we need to have the employees that know how to keep them up. And again, we've learned a lot about how to harden that system, monitor that system. I mean, we could go into a whole other session on drone work and right-of-ways and forest clearing and everything else to make sure that this system is harder than it was, you know, a generation ago.
Yeah, and I think we're on a good trajectory, but this whole discussion to renewables has been I think we need to have more engagement in it through not only industry people, but consumers as well.
Yeah, and I think folks need to understand that what they want is power all of the time, not the intermittent aspect of it. But you can always, again, you can feather in from the generation side, you can feather in renewables with some base load. And then on the beneficial electrification side, you're feathering in this load. It's almost a dispatchable load that you can bring in when you need it.
Good stuff, Jim. I appreciate that.
Thank you,
I appreciate
Tom.
The work you're doing there as well. I think it's important for us all. Jim Horan, the executive director of the Midwest Electric Consumers Association.
For 74 years, Mountain West Farm Bureau Mutual Insurance Company has put their experiences towards serving the insurance needs of families, individuals, and businesses throughout Montana and Wyoming. They continue to serve local communities by earning trust every day in every relationship by promising to provide quality insurance that best fits your specific needs. Call your local Mountain West agent today and start planning your insurance strategy or visit MWFBI.com. Trust experience, trust Mountain West Insurance.
All right, back live here, Voices of Montana, live from the UC Center, Electrify the Big Sky. It's a conference on beneficial electrification. The gentleman who coined that phrase is now president of the Beneficial Electrification League. Keith Dennis joins us, one of the speakers here. Good morning, Keith. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So I like the phrase beneficial electrification because it tries to take a broad view of electrifying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Define it.
Yeah, so beneficial electrification is really making use of electricity in places that otherwise isn't using it, mostly things that burn fossil fuel like electric vehicles or gas furnaces, and uses electricity. And we do it in a way that's beneficial to everybody. So that means that it saves money, helps the environment, is good for the grid, and improves quality of life. And it's important to make sure that we focus on that beneficial part so that we're not just doing something that's maybe good for the environment but will cost people a lot of money, or not good for the environment but will save save money. So it's really a balance to get that definition.